Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Guiding Light. My name is Regina. It's good to see you all. Wound it up for me, did you, Carrie? Thank you. Thank you very much. When you were playing, Isn't She Lovely? I know you said that was for all of us, but for me, the she was you. Isn't She Lovely? It was you. Thank you. Wello, is that what you, wello, Ron, nice to see you. So we are here for The Guiding Light. And last week on The Guiding Light, it's kind of funny because when we started this, we joked that the name was like a soap opera. But it's funny because it is like a soap opera. We're going through the story of Jesus as told in the book of John. And each week I start by reviewing what happened last week. So it is like a soap opera, The Guiding Light. So last week on The Guiding Light, we looked at our willingness for ego death. And in fact, let me just read a little bit of what we looked at last week. This may remind you. Jesus said, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. The man who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. Whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, my servant will also be. My Father will honor the one who serves me." So you might remember we spent a lot of time on those words. And I'm wondering if I can quickly find a Nisargadatta quote. Let's see if I can. I don't know, but I know that I just read it again this weekend, so it's not far. Let's see if I can find it. Okay, here it is. This is the Nisargadatta quote. Now, of course, what we're talking about here is ego death or death of the mind. And if you know Nisargadatta, you know that his recommendation is to focus on the I am. And that if you focus on the I am, it will lead to this death. So with that said, all you need to do is to try and try again. The all-important word is try. A lot, enough time daily for sitting quietly and trying, just trying to go beyond the personality. What matters is the persistence with which you keep on returning to yourself. You just keep on trying until you succeed. If you persevere, there can be no failure. What matters supremely is sincerity, earnestness. You must really have had surfeit of being the person you are. Now see the urgent need of being free of this unnecessary self-identification with a bundle of memories and habits. This steady resistance against the unnecessary is the secret of success. And of course, the unnecessary again is the personality or self-identification with a bundle of memories and habits. And that's really the same as what Jesus is saying here. Because Jesus said, again, the man who loves his life will lose it. Right? That would be the man who has not had Serfiat of being the person you are. And I think I told you all last week, I did have to look Serfiat up. And it meant getting, being tired of. So Jesus says, the man who loves his life will lose it. So if you are not tired of being the person, if you still are interested in the person, then you will cling to the person until the death of the person, right? The one who loves his life will lose it, while the man who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life, right? So if we've had surfeit of being the person we are, and we're willing to focus our attention beyond the person with consciousness and have interest in consciousness, see consciousness as valuable, that will lead to the death of the person, but then the realization of what we truly are, which is the eternal life. All right, so thank you, Nisargadatta and Jesus. All right, so before we begin something new, why don't we listen to a bit of music? So I guess the song that I have here is, it's called I Am Everything, and it's by Denise Hagen. So why don't we listen to this? The purpose of the song, of course, is to take us into the heart prior to the new material. So here we go.
Yeah.
Wonderful, Denise Hagen. Thank you so very much for that song. So today I'm going to begin reading in the Bible at John chapter 12, verse 37. And the name of this story is The Jews Continue in Their Unbelief. Even after Jesus had done all these miraculous signs in their presence, they still would not believe him. This was to fulfill the word of Isaiah the prophet, "Lord, who has believed our message and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" For this reason, they could not believe, because as Isaiah says elsewhere, "He has blinded their eyes and deadened their hearts. They can neither see with their eyes nor understand with their hearts, nor turn, and I would heal them." Isaiah said this because he saw Jesus' glory and spoke about him. Yet at the same time, many, even among the leaders, believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they would not confess their faith, for fear they would be put out of the synagogue, for they loved praise from men more than praise from God. Then Jesus cried out, "When a man believes in me, he does not believe in me. When he looks at me, he sees the one who sent me. I have come into the world as a light, so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness. As for the person who hears my words but does not keep them, I do not judge him. For I did not come to judge the world, but to save it. There is a judge for the one who rejects me and does not accept my words. That very word which I spoke will condemn him at the last day. For I did not speak of my own accord, but the Father who sent me commanded me what to say and how to say it. I know that this command leads to eternal life. So whatever I say is just what the Father told me to say." So first, looking at the words of Isaiah, "Lord, who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" To me, that's a question for me. And I suppose I would recommend that each one take it as a question for yourself as well. The question being, are we trusting this message? So much so that it is changing us. When Ellie Ruzdar was here, again, you all will remember, she talked about how only, I think, about 1% of the people were born only wanting to know truth and having no interest in the world. And the vast majority of people, I think she said 90%, but probably more, the vast majority of the people are born with an interest in the world and an interest in experience. But then she talked about this 3 to 5% who is born with an interest in the world, born with experience, an interest in experience, wanting experience. But somehow during the lifetime, that begins to change. They begin to see that it isn't experience that they want, and they begin to want the truth. Well, what would happen for those people, those 3 to 5%, is there would appear to be change. Change in what I wanted to what I want now, which is only truth. change in how I spent my time, change in what my interests were to how I spend my time now and what my interest is now, there would be change. If there wasn't change, there wouldn't be going from one group, the group who only has interest in the world, to the other group, the group that only has interest in truth. And so, when I hear this question, Lord, who has believed our message and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? That to me is speaking to us, the 3 to 5%. Those who may have been born with more interest in the world and now seem to be crossing over. And if we are crossing over, then we are experiencing a change. A change in how we spend our time. A change in how we are with our own mind. A change in what our interests are. And so this question for me, to me, is just saying, do you see the change? Are you embracing this opportunity for crossing over? Are you noticing the change? I used to be a corporate trainer. And one of the things that we always said is that if there wasn't a change in the way someone was, you know, for example, if they were a manager, a change in their management style, if there wasn't a change, then it means they did not learn. Well, I think the same thing is true here. We can come to the guiding light and we can listen to this incredible wisdom that is being revealed. But if we aren't seeing a change, then we aren't the ones who are trusting the message. As we know, Jesus says later, he says, I do not judge the person who hears my words but does not keep them, right? And we'll get to that. He says, I do not judge the person. So that doesn't mean that there is to be judgment. But I think that one way to maybe help invoke this change, if there hasn't been a change, is some self-reflection, some looking, some noticing that, you know, I go to the guiding light every week or I listen to the audios, but I have not changed. I have not, you know, increased my time in meditation, or I have not increased my ability to watch my mind without acting from it. And then to start asking, what is it that I really want? I find there's great power in that question. What is it that I really want? That question itself motivates me and leads me to change. It's funny because that's one of the primary questions that NTI teaches. What do I really want? What is my true desire? Because we all tend to follow our conscious desire. So if I think my conscious desire is to work and make money, or I think my conscious desire is to avoid work as much as I can or anything else, then that's how I will spend my time and that's where my interests will go. But if I ask that question, what do I really want? What do I really want? What do I really want? I may somehow dig down deep enough that I get to the heart and my true wanting, which comes from the heart, which is, as NTI puts it, know thyself. And if I can pay enough attention to that desire, if I can realize that it is my highest desire, my truest desire, and if I can allow myself to be motivated by that desire, then there will begin to be a change. A change in my interests, a change in how I spend my time, etc. So again, the question that Isaiah asked, Lord, who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? So the question is that me? Am I one to whom the arm of the Lord has been revealed, so that I am motivated to true spiritual practice, motivated away from the world, motivated within, to live from within, and to seek within? Now the second quote from the book of Isaiah, He has blinded their eyes and deadened their hearts, so they can neither see with their eyes, nor understand with their hearts, nor turn, and I would heal them. I don't know the context of that quote. I didn't prepare for this. I didn't go back and look that up in Isaiah. So I have this quote from the book of Isaiah out of context. But out of context, what it says to me is that the ego cannot do this. The ego cannot awaken. One thing that I notice in meditation sometimes is I notice the ego trying to awaken. I see it. And in fact, when I see the ego really trying to awaken, I'll also notice that my face gets tight, like the muscles in my face get tight when the ego is trying to awaken. And when I notice that, I practice self-inquiry a lot during meditation. So I'll ask, who is it that sees this? Who is it, who is it that sees this efforting of the ego trying to awaken? Although I never use that many words in my mind during meditation, just who is it that sees this? And when I say, who is it that sees this, my inner glance, my inner attention shifts to something that is certainly not efforting, not trying to wake up, something that is just being, just ising, just present. And then I just gently rest in that, and all trying ceases. Right? All trying ceases. I think it's really important for us to know that the ego cannot awaken, because it's going to keep trying. And if we don't know that the ego cannot awaken, since we're typically identified with the ego, we may struggle too hard with the ego. And that struggling in itself creates a sense of suffering. In fact, sometimes I think that Elie Ruzdahl sees a lot of people who do this, because she seems to encourage people who are not ready to quit the spiritual path. She says there's just too much suffering if you're not ready. And I imagine, and I highlight the word imagine because I didn't ask her this, but I imagine that she sees a lot of people who are very identified with the ego, and the ego is trying to awaken, and there's great, great suffering that's happening through this efforting, this trying to achieve a goal that cannot be achieved by the ego. And because their identification is too strong, her mercy just says, go do something else, something that you can do. Of course, she's speaking to the ego identification, right? This says, he has blinded their eyes and deadened their hearts, so they can neither see with their eyes nor understand with their hearts, nor turn. The ego cannot turn. I either remember Bob Ferguson saying this when I interviewed him, or I read it in one of his books, because I've read two of his books in the last couple of months. But he talks about this day when he's out. I can't remember if he's hiking or he's cross-country skiing. I think he's doing one or the other, but he's out in the Rocky Mountains alone. And something happened to him. And the way he describes that was his attention turned. It turned. And for the first time ever, he was looking at the true self. And he comments, the ego can't do that. All the ego can do is look out. Right? The ego cannot turn and look at the true self. The ego can only look out. And that's what this says. At least that's what this says to me. He has blinded their eyes and deadened their hearts. They can neither see with their eyes nor understand with their hearts nor turn, it says. They cannot turn. So the ego cannot do this. And that efforting at the ego level to try and do this, that efforting that I sometimes see during meditation when the muscles in my face have grown tight, That's an efforting that can just be completely let go. Completely, completely let go, because it will never achieve anything. Ever. Ever. That type of effort is never going to result in awakening. It's wasted energy. He has blinded their eyes and deadened their hearts, so they can neither see with their eyes nor understand with their hearts, nor turn. But then there's a little M dash. And after the M dash, it says, and I would heal them. You know, if it wasn't for the M dash, it would sound like this hopeless situation, right? But then the M dash, and I would heal them. Well, what is the I? The I is what we often call the I am. Let me go back to Nisargadatta. I spent a lot of time with Nisargadatta this weekend. I underlined some things. I'm not sure what I underlined. Let's just look at my underlines and see if we can find something here. Nisargadatta says, when the mind is kept away from its usual preoccupations, it becomes quiet. If you do not disturb this quiet and stay in it, you find that it is permeated with a light and a love you have never known, and yet you recognize it at once as your own nature. You know, it's interesting because Nisargadatta, I'm looking at my underlines, and Nisargadatta talks a lot about providing sustained effort, struggling on and on, endurance and perseverance, earnest application. Right? He talks about this word. So what's the difference between the struggling and the efforting that Nisargadatta is talking about and the struggling and the efforting of the ego, which we said will never, ever, ever get you there. Well, I can tell you what it means to me. One thing that I do is I get up at 5 a.m. every morning. Every morning. To make sure that before whatever the day's responsibilities are, before they begin, that I have hours for meditation and contemplation. And that getting up at 5 a.m. now has become a pretty nice habit, but in the beginning, it was not. In the beginning, I had to struggle to get up at 5 a.m. My mind would say that I don't want to get up at 5 a.m. to meditate. I want to sleep a little longer, right? So I had to struggle to develop the habit. I had to be earnest. Another thing that happens sometimes, not all of the time, today it happened. Sometimes when I go to meditate, there's a very busy mind, very busy. It's always somewhat busy, but usually after a time, it calms down and quiets down. But then there's those days when it's very busy. It doesn't feel like for any particular reason. It just is. And on the days when it's very busy, there's a struggling that it's not the type that tightens my face, but it's a constant losing interest in the thoughts. A constant losing interest. And if it's a day when the mind is particularly active, I need to put a little more attention. I'm going to use the word attention instead of effort. A little more attention into making sure that I continually lose that interest. Because if I don't put attention in making sure, then I naturally get caught up in that, right? On those days. And then there are times, I'm sure there are times. Right now I'm in a space where I haven't felt this in a while, but I'm sure that it's there and it may even come back. There are times when there's this doubt that meditation will ever achieve anything. Right now, I don't feel that doubt. I feel only confidence. But doubt. And when there's that doubt, if that doubt is strong, if it's telling you that you're wasting your time, you could be doing other things, right? Well, then it would take effort to meditate anyway. During those periods of time when the doubt is strong. But when we're in meditation, it's not the ego. It's not the effort of the ego that accomplishes anything. When we're in meditation, it's the letting go of the ego, the losing interest in the ego, the finding awareness, and then just resting there. Finding the I am. And just being there. And that's the I that heals. And it heals through us choosing to be there. With our attention there and resting there and doing nothing there. And as Nisargadatta says, we have to keep doing that. Let's see the quote that I read earlier during our review. He says, "All you need to do is try and try again." I would call that, take the time to meditation, go into meditation, lose interest in thoughts. In fact, I read this morning when reading from Living a Life That Knows Only Love, I read the line, "Drop all thought as if you have no interest in it. That's where the trying happens, right? All you need to do is to try and try again. The all-important word is try. And then listen to this. A lot, enough time daily for sitting quietly and trying, just trying, to go beyond the personality. What matters is the persistence with which you keep on returning to yourself. And of course, if you're going beyond the personality and returning to yourself, he's referring to placing the attention on awareness or the I am presence. That's the I that heals. So it's funny that on the one hand we say the effort of the ego will never do this, and on the other hand we say you must continue to try, you must continue to put effort in it, right? So it's up to us to find that space where both of these sentences are pointing. It's not the effort of the ego, let go of the efforting and keep trying. It's that space in between. But the trying, again, is the trying of letting go of the ego's efforting. The trying of letting go of the ego's interests. And then resting in the I am. He has blinded their eyes and deadened their hearts so they can neither see with their eyes nor understand with their hearts nor turn. M-dash. And I would heal them. I am heals. Resting in I am heals. Awakens. It's the sunbeam that returns to the sun. All right, so let's look at Jesus' words. Jesus says, when a man believes in me, he does not believe in me only, but in the one who sent me. When he looks at me, he sees the one who sent me. I have come into the world as a light, so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness. Once upon a time, I used to see certain people as having clarity and other people as not having clarity. And then I think I even remember the year. It was 2012. It was that year of increased silence that I took, where I did almost no work at all. I spent all of my time contemplating the seven steps to awakening. And during that year, that way of seeing changed. Instead of seeing some people who had clarity and some people who did not have clarity, which is a huge separation, you know, like I could say, this person has clarity and this person has clarity, but this person doesn't, right? Instead of seeing that way, I started to see one clarity that shines through many and can shine through any. Although not everyone is yet open to it, but it's right there, ready to shine when they're ready to open to it. I began to see one clarity. And in fact, I remember that year, I would go into Facebook. I had certain groups that I watched. And I remember I would go into Facebook, and in these groups, people were speaking from clarity. And I would literally say to myself, there it is again. And there it is again. And there it is again. And even though it had what we could call different names attached to it, I was noticing it's the same clarity. Oh, look, there it is again. Oh, look, there it is again. And the difference began to disappear. I just began to see the same clarity shining through many. Well, that's what I feel Jesus is saying here. You know, when a man believes in me, right? Like you may be looking at a a Hebrew man standing here from the city of, or from the village of Nazareth, right? But when a man believes in me, he doesn't believe in me only, but in the one who sent me, the one clarity. He may think he's listening to Jesus. He may think he loves Jesus and wants to be loyal to Jesus. But the truth is, it's the one clarity. That's what he's really connecting to. When a man believes in me, he does not believe in me only, but in the one who sent me. When he looks at me, he sees the one who sent me. I have come into the world as a light, so that no one who believes in me should stay in darkness. Now, how do you not stay in darkness? By allowing the clarity in you. If you don't ever allow the clarity in you, right, boom, then you do stay in darkness. So this one clarity that shines in Jesus needs to shine in you too. You need to be that same one. Otherwise, you stay in darkness. Because Jesus can't go everywhere with you. I mean, not this physical Jesus, right? We're talking about a physical man here, blood, flesh and bones, right? He can't go with you everywhere. So you're going to be stumbling in the darkness at some point if you are dependent on him for clarity. That one, the one that I said, there it is, and there it is, and there it is, as I pointed at different people's posts with the same clarity coming through, there it is, and there it is, that needs to shine in you too. You need to open to that. That needs to become you. So that you no longer are your bundle of thoughts and beliefs and opinions and fears and desires and aversions, but you are the clarity. Jesus continues, "As for the person who hears my words but does not keep them, I do not judge him." And we talked about this a little bit ago, that if we really are listening, if we really are listening, we are also changing. If we're listening at the depth of our being, we're starting to do things like set our alarms so that we can make sure we get up and meditate. Maybe looking around at what we do with our time and noticing, I don't really need to do this. I don't really need to do this. In fact, one of the things I read this weekend with Nisargadatta, he said, before you do anything, ask, do I need to do this? And if not, then don't, right? And that starts happening. We start becoming very efficient with our time because we want to have as much time as possible for meditation, contemplation, maybe inspirational reading that helps increase that desire for awakening, right? But we want to have as much time as possible for our spiritual practice, our focused spiritual practice. And so we start doing away with things that we don't really have to do. You know, I recently cleared my plate a lot. There were probably about 50% of the things I used to do in the sanctuary, for example, I let go of. And I still do plenty. I was like, I don't really have to do this. I don't really have to do this. And I moved some things away to create more time. But Jesus says, if you aren't doing that, really, if you're one of the ones that you're hanging out here for some reason, listening to me talk all the time, but you aren't making any changes, he says, I don't judge you. And you know, that's okay. However, he doesn't leave it at that. He does say, I did not come to judge the world, but to save it. He says, but then he says in verse 48, there is a judge for the one who rejects me and does not accept my words. That very word which I spoke will condemn him at the last day. Now, what does that mean? Well, what I hear in that is that his own way of thinking will condemn him by by continuing to bring on suffering. One of the things that Michael Langford said in the audios when we were talking about the desire to awaken or the desire for the ego death, he said that, because I said suffering was not a motivator for me because, you know, I have a pretty happy life, so that wasn't my motivation. And he said even if you have, you know, a very happy life, suffering can still be a motivation. And he said because if you don't, you know, if you don't experience manonessa, mind death, ego death, he says you will have many, many, many more lives. Well, there'll be all kinds of suffering. You'll live through all kinds of wars. You'll live through all kinds of disease. Some people didn't like that answer. In fact, one friend asked me to ask Ellie Ruzdar, you know, what did she think about that? And she came back in an email saying, well, you know, basically, as long as you still believe the ego, you know, suffering will come. You know, it's just kind of the nature of things. And that's what I hear in this too. Jesus says, I am not judging you. But there is a judgment. You know, that judgment is just the choice you're making. The choice you're making is a judgment. The choice that you're making to continue believing the ego, to continue being identified with the person as who you are, will result in suffering. And so it has its own, you could say, judgment built in. Its own final decision of what you're going to experience is kind of built in to the decision. So there was something. Oh, it was something I was reading in the Bhagavad Gita. I teach the Bhagavad Gita class, or at least I did. Yesterday was the last day, but there was something I was reading in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna was saying the exact same thing. And we paused and looked at that, and some of the people were saying, "Oh, God, that scares me." You know, I said, "Well, one way to look at it, you know, if you look at it with the wrong mind, one way to look at it is fearful, no doubt about it. But there is another way to look at it. It's kind of just a black and white statement. You know, it's like the way Michael Langford puts it in The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. You have choice A and you have choice B. You know, choice A is eternal awareness, love, bliss. And choice B is lifetime after lifetime, which includes suffering, all kinds of suffering. And that's just that's the choice you are making right now. You're making either choice A or choice B right now in the way that you're choosing to live your life, in the way that you're choosing to spend your time, in what you're choosing to be interested in. And sure, spiritual teachers could lie to us and say that's not true so that we can feel better about it. But why would they do that? Why would they lie to us and make us feel better if that is just the way it is? They might as well be honest with us and tell us you have two choices. And you are making one choice or the other right now. And they might as well encourage us to examine our choices and, again, ask ourselves, what do I really want? Because if we examine that and ask, what do I really want? What do I really want? We might begin the change, the crossover from being someone who's interested in the world to someone who wants only truth, which of course is inevitably going to lead to that awakening. That's another thing that I've been hearing from all of the teachers, from Ellie Ruzdar, from Michael Langford, from Ramana Maharshi, from V. Ganeshan, from Nisargadatta Maharaj, from Krishna. They're all saying the same thing to me, and the way that I word it is, if you do it, you will die. But that's the ego death. If you do it, if you make the time for this meditation and any contemplation or inspirational reading that is necessary to keep increasing that desire, right? But if you make the time, if you do it, and you put all of your interest there, put all of your eggs in one basket, you will succeed. Nisargadatta is very clear. He says you cannot fail. But that's if you do it. That's if you make choice A. That's if you dedicate your life to this purpose and this purpose only. That's if you want this and only this. You cannot fail. So what Jesus is saying here is, those of you who do not choose to listen to me, he says, I don't judge you, but but you're making choice B and you're going to suffer. That's what he's saying. There's a judgment built in to your choice. You know, you all know that I went this weekend to meet V. Ganeshan, but I didn't have a conversation with him, because you may also remember that before I went, he told me that his message to me was the last line of the teachings of Inner Ramana. And let me read that last line to you again. Come without questions and simply be, right? So I did not talk to him, and I spent the entire weekend in silence. But I was curious when he was speaking. There was this curiosity that just kind of came along with me about, would he ever look me directly in the eye while speaking and say anything? And if so, what would he say? What would that second message be? And all weekend, he did not look at me until the last few minutes, literally his last few sentences. And in his last few sentences, he locked eyes with me. And he said, wake up. You're not who you take yourself to be. You're God. That's what I hear Jesus saying. Even by saying, the judgment is built into your choices. If you're making the choice B, you are going to suffer. The right-minded interpretation of that isn't fear. Oh my gosh, fear, right? The right-minded interpretation of that is, wake up. You aren't who you take yourself to be. You're God. Now spend your time finding that out for yourself. That's the right-minded interpretation. There's no reason to fear the truth. If you're afraid of the truth, you're making choice B and you're going to suffer the consequences. We don't need to ask spiritual teachers, please don't tell me the truth because I don't want to hear it. Because when you say to spiritual teachers, please don't tell me the truth, I don't want to hear it, you are making choice B and you are going to suffer. We might as well let them be honest with us and listen to it with a clear head. And we will hear, wake up. We may also hear, if you do it, you will die. And something in us may leap for joy to know that there is such certainty in choice A. So Jesus says, there is a judge for the one who rejects me and does not accept my words. That very word which I spoke will condemn him at the last day. And then he goes on to say, I did not speak of my own accord, but the Father who sent me commanded me what to say and how to say it. I know that his command leads to eternal life. So whatever I say is just what the Father has told me to say. So Jesus is not making excuses for his honesty. The ego may not want to hear it, The me who's identified with a person may not want to hear that if I do not make the choice A, that I am going to have thousands and thousands of other lifetimes. I will suffer every kind of disease, every kind of war, every kind of suffering imaginable. I will go through over and over again. I may not want to hear that. I may wish spiritual teachers didn't talk that way. But Jesus says, the Father who sent me commanded me what to say and how to say it. I know that His command leads to eternal life. If you will look plainly and directly at choice B, honestly, it will help you to make choice A. What I am saying will lead to eternal life. So whatever I say is just what the Father has told me to say. Blessed be. Let's see, I have 1 minute left. Let's see if we can find Krishna saying the same thing. Since I just read it yesterday, it might not be hard to find in the last minute here. And it might be too, you never know. No, I'm not going to be able to find it. Not in 1 minute. Maybe if I'd had more than one, I could have found it 2 minutes. But for now, I'll just release the mic. And I'll be back next week. And we'll begin reading at John chapter 13. Jesus washes his disciples' feet. And by the way, if you want more on choice A and choice B, I recommend reading The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss by Michael Langford, most recently published as, what's the new name? Oh yeah, that's it. The Direct Means to Eternal Bliss, that's the new name. All right, and that will talk all about choice A and choice B in a very clear way. All right, bye.